Blog Talk Radio.
We are the Borg. Lower your shield and surrender your ships. We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. Your culture will adapt to service us. Resistance is futile.
Hey, good evening, guys. It's Uncle Jim from Trek Talking here with you. Tonight, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to visit our archives. We have over 352 shows that we've previously recorded, and I'm just going to go back and pick some of my favorite ones and play them for you in this new segment called Archives. This is our second show in the archives, and this is the review discussion that we did on Star Trek First Contact. Resistance is futile. So sit back and enjoy, and remember, you can join us live every Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a brand new episode of Trek Talking. And make sure you visit us on our Facebook page at Trek Talking and Beyond. And without any further ado, here's our archive show, Star Trek First Contact.
Blog Talk Radio.
Janeway, Spock, Spear, Locus, action very weird, Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife, Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very harsh, Spore Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Teacher, bad left, Edward is an idiot, Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kempak's at, Q has had enough of that, beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We talk about the series, you can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series, we're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series,
well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It's time for another episode of Trek Talking. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim. And we've got a great show planned for you guys tonight. I hope you guys hear me fine now. Did I get that issue fixed?
Yeah, sound perfect.
Okay, good. We're trying out our new equipment that we're going to be using at the Star Trek 55-year mission in Las Vegas. And this is the first podcast where I'm using this new equipment. And we were testing it before the show, and we had a pretty nasty feedback. But I guess it's gone now. You guys can hear me.
Sounds good, Jim.
Excellent. So anyways, we've got a great show planned for you guys tonight. We're going to be talking about Star Trek First Contact. So you want to get us on speed dial, 646-668-2433 is our number here. And you want to put that in speed dial because next week we have a great, and I mean great, show planned for you guys. Jeremy Roberts, who played Mr. Dimitri Valtaine in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and reprised his role in Star Trek Voyager's 25th anniversary special flashback, will be with us live to take your questions and talk about working on Star Trek VI and Star Trek Voyager. But wait, there's more. We also have some copies of the new Season 3 Star Trek Discovery to give away to you guys. Absolutely free, but you have to call to win. So make sure you put our number on your speed dial, 646-668-2433. You can talk to Jeremy Roberts and win a copy of Star Trek Discovery Season 3 on DVD. And I just want to give you some information about that. Star Trek Discovery Season 3 is coming to Blu-ray and DVD and limited edition Steelbook. The must-have collector's features all 13 episodes and also includes over 2 hours of special features, including deleted scenes, behind-the-scenes featurettes, cast interviews, and a gag reel. Own Star Trek Discovery Season 3 on Blu-ray and DVD now from CBS and Paramount Home Entertainment. And you can win it right here from us at Trek Talking. All you have to do is call 646-668-2433 next Thursday, 7:30 p.m. You can win a copy and you can talk to Jeremy Roberts. It's a win-win situation all the way around. So the way we like to start off our show each week is – I'd like to introduce you to my wonderful Trek experts. And we'll start off with Eric. Eric's out in Portland. How are you doing tonight, Eric?
I am doing very well. It is a sunny, breezy day here in Portland. If you sometimes hear a lawnmower in the background, it's because I absolutely have to have my window open, and the neighbor is mowing right now. So, but we are excited to talk about this movie tonight. I have some unique perspective that I may not have offered up in the past. So here we go.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. And we also have with us Charles. Charles is out in Las Vegas, a city that I'm going to be visiting for the first time very, very shortly. How are you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I just had a pleasant day today. It only got to about 104.
Oof.
Due to the monsoons, we've gotten a little bit of a cooler weather. Not much, but a little.
Wow.
How do you do it, Charles? How do you do it?
I'm looking forward to being there.
Lots of air conditioning. Lots of air conditioning, and you don't really get bothered by it until it hits at least 105.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a different calibration, right?
Exactly.
So, guys, as I said, we're going to be talking about Star Trek First Contact tonight, so you want to stay tuned for that. But we also have some Star Trek news for you. Miko strikes back with new Star Trek figures. Is Star Trek the Animated Series really considered canon? And a new Star Trek card novel called Second Half fills in the gaps. We also have Star Trek birthdays, fan shout-outs, and Around the Globe numbers. And speaking of Around the Globe numbers, Eric, why don't you start us off?
Well, we love recognizing our international listeners, and in our number one spot for our international listeners, we have once again the UK with 6.54% of our listeners. So that is a pretty hefty chunk there. So thank you, folks in the UK. Your support just means so much to us, and you've been at the top of our list for so long. We just really appreciate it. In our number two spot, almost a six with 5.96% of our listeners. We have Canada. That's right. Our brothers and sisters to the north sort of fell off the map there for a little bit, but man, they have been coming back strong lately. Perhaps it is people who know all about GM Chris. Not sure. Could be some support there. Could be support elsewhere. Thank you, folks in Canada, for listening to us. In that number three spot, we have Australia with 4.27% of our listeners. Thank you. Thank you very much. In that number four spot, Ireland with 1.85% of our listeners. And bringing up the top five, we still have Norway up there. They have been there for a very long time as well with 1.75% of our listeners. Thank you to every single one of our listeners, whether you're here in the U.S. with us or you are abroad. We couldn't do it without you. We really, really couldn't do it without you.
That's right. We appreciate each and every single one of you guys, no matter where you're listening from. Thank you so much. And not only do we like to go by region, but we like to go by cities as well. So every week we compile our top 10 cities based on our listeners. And Charles, why don't you start us off with our cities?
Well, not only do we have our top 10, but we have a few select cities of our crew and fans. Indianapolis, Indiana, near Shannon, actually went down. Went from 37, now in 33rd place. Portland, Oregon was 23rd last week, dropped to 25th this week. Eric lost a couple of listeners.
Come on, Portland, you can do it.
Las Vegas, I'm surprised, went from 19th last week back down to 16th this week. Couple more listeners. In our top 10, our fight continues. Our Aussies keep working their way down to get with the rest of the Aussies. Brazil, São Paulo, Brazil is still at 10th. San Antonio, Texas is still at 9th. But this week, Chicago, Illinois is now 8th. They were 7th last week. Why are they now 8th? Because Brisbane, Queens, Australia is still moving up the list. They were 8th last week. They are 7th this week. A to trying to catch up the rest of the Australians. And, of course, the rest of the list, they're going to probably might trump over Toronto, Ontario, Canada next week. Then we got Los Angeles, California, home of Andy Bray and the Fleet. Melbourne, Victoria, and Australia is fourth. Sydney, New South Wales, Australia is third. London, UK is second. And New York City is first.
Wow. And New York City is probably the closest to where I'm broadcasting from up here in Rutland, Vermont. New York is pretty much, it's pretty close to me. So I would have to say that New York City represent. So we also like to do individual fan shout outs to all of you guys that listen around the globe. And to do that, you can go to our Facebook page, which is Trek Talking and Beyond. And at the top of the page, you'll see a post that has the Live Long and Prosper. And all you need to do is go there and tell us where you're from. Every week, I pick 15 lucky people. If you see a heart next to your name from Trek Talking, that means yours truly, Uncle Jim, has picked your name, and you're going to be mentioned in a fan shout-out. And you can join our 56,769 followers that we have on our Facebook page. So please, let's see if we can get up to 57, 58 maybe. I know that we can. So for our individual fan shout-outs, Eric, why don't you get us started?
We have some really cool locations I'm so excited about this week. Top fan Michael Langdon says hello to us from the Sunshine Coast of Queensland, Australia. Those folks who are right up there in our top 10, Michael Langdon, leading the charge, top fan interacting with us like crazy on our Facebook page. So thank you so much, Michael. It's fans like you that make it all worth it for us, really. Andreas Feck. This one is one of my favorites. He starts with Earth, Europe, Germany, Northernshire, Westfalen, and Recklinghausen. So, Andreas, thank you for being very specific because, you know, if you don't start on the right planet, who knows if we're getting the right guy. So thank you for listening to us, Andreas Beck. We're saying hello this week to Jim Hutchinson from Fife, Scotland, about 30 miles from where Scotty will be born. And then he gives us a little Scottish flag there. So thank you, Jim. Great to hear from you. Joe Ritchie from Darlington in County Durham in the UK. That's right. Our number one international listener, Joe Ritchie, hailing from there. So hello to you, and thanks for listening to us. And last in my list is Barbara Dietrich from Iwa Beach in Hawaii. Aloha. Aloha to you, Barbara. Thank you for listening to us. You know, we're fairly close. 5.5-hour plane ride, not so far. And your state is absolutely beautiful. Thank you for listening to us. Charles, who is on your list today?
Let's start off with Christina Radu from Athens, Greece. She's a top fan. Ruth Mall from Allentown, Pennsylvania, in the United States. Ted Mario McGee from Clearwater, Florida. Paula Happy Warner from Nevada, USA. Which part of Nevada? This is a big state. And Max Kendi from Newcastle, UK. And where's Jim coming from?
Well, I've got a couple of fan shout-outs myself. We would like to say hello and thank you to Stephen McClucky from Glasgow, Scotland, where my grandmother came from. Actually, I got to tell you guys that my fan shout-outs are actually from last week, because last week we had a very terrible technical difficulty, and I didn't get to do my fan shout-out. So these guys are from last week. I apologize for that. We'd like to say hello to Philip O'Dwyer from Dublin, Ireland, where my grandfather came from. Yes, my grandmother's Scottish and my grandfather's Irish. That makes me, yeah, that makes me. We'd also like to say hello and thank you so much to top fan Zeb Gibson from Kentucky, USA, which actually I believe Shannon is from Kentucky, correct?
Mm-hmm, that is true.
I remember her saying that she was from Kentucky, so represent. And here's one of our top cities right here. We'd like to say hello, thank you, and kapla to Roland Owens from New York City. That's right, New York City. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being our top city. And last but not least, we'd like to say hello, thank you, and live long and prosper to Mario Maggi from Buenos Aires, Argentina. Thank you for listening, guys. We appreciate each and every single one of you guys. We would never think of doing the show without you guys. So thank you so, so much. And this is the part of the show where we do our birthdays. And we always do Star Trek birthdays, but this week we have a special birthday. This week, we'd like to say happy birthday to our very own Eric. Eric has been with us for how long, Eric? It seems like an eternity, but...
At least 3.5 years.
3.5 years Eric has been around with us. And so I couldn't do the show without you guys because there is no I in team, and you guys are part of the team. And without you guys, I couldn't do the show. So I want to say thank you so much to Eric for everything that he does for the show, for singing our awesome theme song, to doing our commercials and everything else that you could do for us. Thank you so much, Eric. Happy birthday. And that means that we have to play. I got to get the right song. Yeah, this one here. We want to play Happy Birthday to Eric from Weird Al Yankovic himself.
There's an Arab on the corner buying everything in sight. There's a mother in the ghetto with another now for feet. Seems that everywhere you look today there's misery and greed. I guess you know the earth is going to crash into the sun, but that's no reason why we shouldn't have a little fun. So if you think it's scary, if it's more than you can take, just blow out the candles and have a piece of cake.
Happy birthday! Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday!
So happy birthday, Eric. We hope you had a great day, and we're looking forward to many, many more.
Happy birthday, Eric.
Thank you guys so much. I had a great birthday, and it's great to be part of the Trek Talking team. I appreciate every single Thursday we get together and hang out and just geek out on the things we love. So thanks for that song.
and we do love it. And I wanted to mention at the top of the show, but he wasn't with us. We have David is going to be joining us. I think David's on the line right now. Correct, Charles?
I think
he's on. I see a number I don't recognize on my board, which I believe might be David. And so before we get into our birthdays, I want to jump in here and introduce him. And actually, you know what? I'm going to jump in right now. We have some time right now. I'm going to let Charles introduce David and tell us a little bit about David and an offer that David has to make for you guys, our listeners. So, Charles, take it away.
Well, go ahead and bring him on.
All right. Hey, David, can you hear us now? David, are you there?
Don't go back there.
Bye.
David?
Can you hear me now?
Calling David. David?
Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah.
There we go.
He's here.
How's everybody doing today?
We're doing really good. How are you doing?
Great. Eric, happy birthday.
Thank you so much, man. I really, really appreciate it. It's just so fun to be able to celebrate with so many people.
Right? So thank you guys for allowing me onto your show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem at all. That's what Trek Talking is about. We're fans helping fans, so you're welcome.
Well, this is David McClinton, is pronunciation.
Yes.
He is the captain of the USS Windrunner. The Windrunner is a brand new circus club and costume slash cosplay group. So we're also a community service group. Occasionally we actually do community service where we're actually in uniform if it's not too hot and look like a circus ship. And we actually are a small fleet, a small group of the ship in a larger fleet.
Excellent. And what kind of stuff, what kind of events do you guys do, David?
We honestly, we actually run the gambit, man. In Las Vegas, we are literally doing food drives. We help out at the community garden, which actually serves as our space station. And right now we are trying to partner with the Atomic Testing Museum here in Nevada to actually do some astronomy and probably some science stuff.
Wow, you pretty much do it all.
We are a very active group. I have about, I'll say, 20 core members at the time, currently, and we're all about service and charity work and volunteering. In fact, this Saturday, my science team will be heading out to Lake Mead to do a cleanup.
Wow.
Actually, what we're doing is we're actually going to do some of the plants and going through and pulling seeds so they can replant new plants.
Nice.
We'll put out new plants in there.
That's nice.
Our team is looking forward to Saturday.
Wow. And are you guys planning on attending the Star Trek 55-year mission in Las Vegas?
Of course. We're advertising it.
Wow, what a coincidence, because Trek Talk is going to be there as well.
Well, I heard that. You know,
yeah,
it's a very funny story.
It's true.
So we had an article in a local on a local TV station, and they put it on their website, and then Creation Entertainment contacted us and was like, yeah, we'd like to partner with us to promote the convention. And I was like, sure, yeah, of course you would. Are you kidding me? Yeah, we're in. And so we went to a dinner with the USS Las Vegas, and then they announced that Creation had contacted them. And then Charles said, yeah, they contacted us too. So I was like, okay. For a quick minute, they wouldn't want to thought we were special and unique. But then we quickly found out that no. Creation was talking to everybody, which is great. I love it. That means that we're all in this together. So, yeah. We're going to be there. And if you guys don't mind, I would love to give away 2 tickets, general admission, to some of your local fans.
And Las Vegas is in our top cities, which is pretty cool. So how would you like to do this, David?
All right, so Charles had asked me to watch First Contact, to rewatch First Contact. So guess I would want to ask, and just a simple general question, and the first person who can actually answer it will get the tickets. When did the Enterprise arrive back in time?
Wow, I don't think I know that one.
Good question.
All right. Well, guys, you have a lot of time to get the answer. Our phone number here is 646-62433. If you're listening now live in Las Vegas, quick, put on the DVD, get that answer, give us a call, and David will give you a pair of tickets to the convention. And while you're there, you can mosey on over to the Trek Talking table, say hello to yours truly, Uncle Jim, and you can meet the one and only Leslie Hoffman, and maybe get an autograph from Leslie while you're there as well. So look that up, get the date, get the information, give us a call, 646-668-2433, and David will hook you up with a pair of weekend tickets to Star Trek 55-year mission in Las Vegas. How does that sound? What an awesome, awesome opportunity for you guys.
That is so cool. Wow.
So before we cut to our first commercial break, I want to ask you guys, did the echo go away? I think I found the problem. Can you hear me clear?
You sound 100% awesome, Jim.
All right. I found the problem, which is great. That means when we go to Las Vegas, we won't have that problem. That's why I wanted to test it out tonight. So that's good. All right, guys. Well, we're going to take our very first commercial break of the night. We're going to hear a song, a little ditty from an old friend of mine. And when we come back, we're going to do our Star Trek birthdays. We just wished happy birthday to our very own Eric. If you'd like to give us a call, 646-668-2433, you can wish Eric a happy birthday live on the air in person. But right now, we'll be right back after we hear this little ditty from Eric himself.
It's been a long road getting from there to here. It's been a long time, but your time is finally here. You can feel the change in your thoughts right now. Nothing's in your way, and they're not gonna hold you down no more. No, they're not gonna hold you down, 'cause we've got faith, that's your call. We wanna hear what you have to say. We've got faith to believe in Trek Talking today. You've got faith in your fingers. All you gotta do is dial now. You can reach us right now. We've got faith. We've got faith. Faith that you call.
646-668-2433. The only thing we forgot was the phone number.
It's funny. We really thought about ways to fit that in, but it's really hard to fit that into that tune. So, yeah. You know, next time we remake that song, we'll put the number in. Yeah.
It worked. But you know what? Our new theme song works even better. And by the way, guys, I want to say thank you to Eric for recording that theme song for us. I had a lot of fun writing it, but I also had a lot of fun putting it on video. And if you guys go to our Facebook page, Trek Talking and Beyond, you can see the video that I put together for that song that Eric did. I think it came out pretty good. I kind of like it. It's a fast beat, up-tempo song, so it moves along at a pretty good pace. Have some fun seeing if you can catch all the characters and episodes as they fly by. Please check that out and leave a comment. Tell me what you thought about it. Trek Talking and Beyond at Facebook. Give us a like. Give us a follow. And tell us where you're from so we can get you mentioned in a future fan shout-out. I also want to apologize. I was hoping to get David on at the top of the show so that you guys would have the whole show to give us a call. And so I had to squeeze him in the middle of the birthday. So that's why we had to shuffle the show. But it's live, and that happened. So without any further ado, we're back on schedule. That means we're going to do the rest of our ever-important Star Trek birthdays.
That was not a Klingon song.
No, he says that every week. We don't care. We like it anyways. And we always start off our birthdays remembering those members of our Star Trek family who are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to the birthday boy himself, Eric.
Yeah, people who share birthdays this week with me, who have gone before us and are no longer with us. Actor Edward Wiley, one of the many actors who has played multiple races in Star Trek. We've got a Klingon, Governor Vogg from TNG's Mind's Eye, and a Cardassian, Gull Torin, from DS9's Profit and Loss. So happy birthday, and remembrances going out to Edward Wiley. We're also saying happy birthday to Ron Glass. We know him from our Star Trek world as the character Loken in Voyager's Nightingale. He probably is more well-known to most sci-fi geeks as the character Book from Firefly, which, of course, is that fantastic one-season pseudo-space cowboy, and he is the shepherd, the religious man on board, who gives Mal a run for his money. So happy birthday to Ron Glass. We do miss him. We're saying happy birthday this week to Lisa Baines. She played Dr. Renthal in DS9's Equilibrium, a Trill, and an actress whose face you would recognize from other things, I believe. So happy birthday to Lisa. We're also saying happy birthday and sending our remembrances out to Keith Andes, who played the character Akuta in TOS's episode The Apple. That is one of those kind of orange-faced aliens from that planet. Definitely, you see that and you're like, wow, that's definitely TOS. Just screams TOS. And cool episode. So happy birthday to Keith Andes. We're saying happy birthday to Frank Corsentino, who is one of the Ferengi guys. He plays so many different Ferengi. He plays Damon Bach from the TNG episode The Battle. He plays Damon Togg from the TNG episode Menage a Troy. And he plays Gegas from the Voyager episode Inside Man. Three different Ferengis, same actor. Totally cool. So he is definitely missed in the Star Trek world, Frank Corsentino. Happy birthday to Ken Lynch, who played the character Vandenberg in the TOS episode Devil in the Dark. I love that episode. I just it's one of my favorite TOS episodes. It just kind of sets, I don't want to get into it, but Ken Lynch played a character of the chief engineer from the place that was kind of doing all the mining underground there. So happy birthday to Ken Lynch. We're saying happy birthday to Tom Troop, who played Lieutenant Harold in the TOS episode Arena, which I know is one of Jim's favorites. He likes that song in particular. Poor Harold died. Lieutenant Harold was just one of those ones that died. So happy birthday to Tim Troop. We're saying happy birthday to Peter Duryea, who played Jose Tyler in the TOS episode The Cage. You absolutely would recognize this kid. He has the red hair and the kind of TOS green uniform, and his name's Jose. I love it. That is what Star Trek is all about. So happy birthday, and remembrances going out to Peter Duryea. And then last on our remembrance list this week is a titan of TOS producing, Robert Justman, would have had a birthday this week. You know, interesting trivia about him, he's known for so many things in the Star Trek world. What most people don't know is that he actually was the original pick to become the associate producer on The Cage way back when Star Trek was first getting started. But he actually didn't take the job. He felt like he didn't have enough post-production knowledge, and he just, like, wasn't up to the task. And so he recommended Byron Haskin for the job, who eventually got the job. So he, of course, would eventually come into the Star Trek world, but he was right there, buddy-buddy with Roddenberry from the beginning. So happy birthday to Robert Justman.
Eric, I believe that when Roddenberry stepped down in season 3 of TOS, I believe Robert Justman stepped in and pretty much ran the show for all of the third season, if I remember my TOS history correctly.
Yeah, I think you're right. And he did so many other things. I mean, he did like directing and, you know, hired people and I don't know, just a lot of stuff. He's one of those guys that you see in the documentaries when you watch your Star Trek documentaries.
And, of course, back to the arena, I'm really excited about going to the Star Trek 55-year mission because the Gorn himself is going to be there, and I can't wait to meet him.
Awesome.
So I'm really excited about that, actually. I'm going to see if we can get him to come on this podcast, maybe, when I talk to him. So that'd be pretty cool. And believe it or not, you still with us, David?
I'm still here, man.
Excellent. Well, because we just had a caller show up on the line, and I'm going to answer this call. This might be somebody calling to win your tickets. Let's see. Hey, good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talk. And what's your name and where are you calling us from tonight?
It's Nate from Vegas.
It's Nate from Vegas. Well, there you have it. We got our Vegas caller.
Am I eligible? Am I eligible for the tickets?
Well, you're from Vegas.
You're eligible.
All right, I'm eligible for the tickets.
Wow.
So
awesome.
What was the question again? So I want to make sure I got this right.
When did the Enterprise, in first contact, when did the Enterprise arrive back in time?
2063 was the year. April 4th through the 5th.
Okay.
Ding, ding,
that's
ding,
a winner
ding,
right
ding,
there.
Ding, ding,
ding. Ding.
We
the
have a winner.
All right. Well done, Nate.
I need you to do. I need you to send me two emails. Take down both of these email addresses.
You need me to send you emails? Okay.
Yeah. Just send me an email with all your information or where I can mail your tickets to.
Well,
you know,
or if you're going to be at War Room on Friday, I don't know how often you plan to go to War Room. I could get them there, too. But, yeah, I can email you the information if that's easier.
Yeah, just for full transparency and with my group, just make sure that, that I'm not trying to slip a friend some tickets.
Yep, cool. I'm good.
Send an email to contact@usswindrunner.com, and then also send an email to usswindrunner@gmail.com.
So at windrunner@gmail and windrunner at where?
Okay, it's windrunner@gmail.com and then contact@windrunner.com. But I just, I said it right.
Contact@usswindrunner.com.
Right.
And then,
windrunner@gmail.com.
Yep.
And runner@gmail. Sure.
And congratulations, Nate. So you can stop by the Trek Talking table and you can meet yours truly, Uncle Jim. Isn't
that
exciting? We get
sounds great.
We could get a picture taken together. You, me, and Charles.
We could.
We can get that up on our Facebook page. We've talked many times, but we've never met. That's about to change.
Yeah,
That is awesome.
So, again, I want to re-verify. It's contact@usswindrunner.com. And then the second one is windrunner@gmail.com.
Correct.
All right.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Nate.
Cool.
All right. Well, that's good. We're giving stuff away left and right, guys. You can also, don't forget, you can win a copy of Star Trek Discovery Season 3 on DVD next week. All you have to do is call 646-668-2433, and you can talk to Jeremy Roberts from Star Trek 6 and from Star Trek Voyager Flashback and win a copy of Discovery Season 3. So it's pretty easy. Just give us a call next week, and you can win. All right.
Are those,
well,
let's Jim,
get back
are those Blu-rays? Are those?
I think they're Steelbook, if I remember correctly. I think they're the Collector Steelbook edition.
Okay. Blu-rays, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't received them yet, but I received the email from them today that they're sending them out. I'm not sure if they're DVDs, Blu-rays, or Steelbook because the letter had all three of them listed. I'm not sure. I'll know for sure when I get them. But we do have 5 copies to give away. So that's
cool.
Excellent. So, and you will be eligible to win those as well. So,
all right,
Charles, let's continue on with our birthdays.
Okay. Let's start off with William Smithers. He played Captain R.M. Merrick in a TOS episode, Bread and Circuses. Susan Powell played Marla Astor in the TNG episode, Bonding. Pamela Adlon played Odie in TNG's episode Who Watches the Watchers? Very good episode when discussed on directed. Megan Parlin played young Rolarin in TNG's episode Rascal, when several of the crew members were turned into kids.
Adorable. Adorable episode.
And had to help save the ship. We also have Hannah Hattie, who played Molly O'Brien in TNG's Rascals also. And actually, that's the same one who played Molly in DS9. So...
That's right.
Yep.
Happy birthday to her. She's looks a little older now. Instead of used to the same little girl.
I always remember
a lot older now.
I always remember. Go ahead.
She shows up to convention. She's one of the definitely pops in the convention.
Yeah, that I've heard that about her.
Vegas.
So cool. Yeah.
Mary O'Quinn plays Admiral Pressman. Episode Pegasus. Bruce McGill played Captain Braxton in Voyager's Relativity. And Conrad Admiral Terrell in Discovery. So, they're my birthdays. And Jim's got several good ones in his list.
Oh, I've got some real good ones here. And, the big one shares a date with another big one, which we'll get to in a minute. I'm going to make you guys wait. Of course, if you follow our Facebook page, you already know, but anyways. So first, I want to say happy birthday to Greg Grunberg. And you guys are like, who's that? Well, Greg Grunberg, actually, he played Finnegan in Star Trek Beyond. He was the guy at the controls, I guess you want to call it the controls, when the station was attacked. He was also the voice of Kirk's stepfather in Star Trek 2009 when Kirk lets the roof fly off the car and he says, you get back here with that car, blah, blah, blah. That was his voice. So happy birthday to Greg Grunberg. We also want to say happy birthday to Lawrence Pressman, who played Leggett Gamar in DS9's episode Second Skin and Ties of Blood and Water. He also played the Krasinski changeling in the DS9 episode, The Adversary. Happy birthday to Loris Pressman. We'd like to say happy birthday to Marco Rodriguez, who played Captain Paul Rice in the TNG episode, Arsenal of Freedom, and Glenn Tellet in the TNG episode, The Wounded. Both excellent characters. I love that episode, Arsenal of Freedom, because that's the one where we fought Tasha Yar was going to die because Data throws her over a log, and they pulled the old switcheroo on us, and she died in the next episode, Skin of Evil. And you guys might remember Captain Rice went to the academy with Riker, and Riker knew him, and he's leaning up against the tree, and he's trying to get information from his ship. And Riker, you guys remember the name that Riker gives for his ship?
The good ship, Lollipop.
The good ship, Lollipop.
Yep.
Yep. I love that. So happy birthday to Marco Rodriguez. And here's an interesting one. We'd like to say happy birthday to Robert Pine, who played Lyra in the Voyager episode, The Shoot, and Captain Tavin in the Enterprise episode, Fusion. He is also the real-life father of Chris Pine, Captain Kirk from the Kelvin universe. But I think most of us would know him as the captain from Chips. When I went out to Los Angeles, I ran into a Chips patrol, and I thought they made it all up for TV, and I felt like that scene in Star Trek IV where they're looking for the nuclear weapon, and I wanted to get a picture with the guy and everything else. I think he thought I was on drugs, but, you know, I was just some redneck hick from Vermont who never saw a Chips patrol, so what can I tell you? Anyways,
you know, I have to say, growing up in California, the CHP got really annoyed when people came into town and wanted to take pictures with them.
Yeah.
It was one of the biggest complaints that they had, but they learned to embrace it And I think one of our mayor governors told him, it's like, listen, if people are coming to town and they look at you as a celebrity, go for it. It's only going to build our reputation up.
Well, I was so backwards. I just thought it was a TV show. I had no idea that they actually were real and that they really rode motorcycles and they really dressed that way. I thought they just made it all up for TV. And there I saw one on the side of the road, and I was like, oh, look, it's a Chips dude. And he wasn't very impressed with me, but at any rate, I was just a tourist. That's what you get. So anyways, we'd also like to say happy birthday to Tom Kenny. Tom Kenny voiced the Ferengi Quip in the Lower Decks episode Envoys. However, everybody would know him from another voice for another character that he does, because Tom Kenny does SpongeBob SquarePants. So happy birthday to Tom Kenny. The next one I have is one that everybody recognizes. When you see this guy's face, you recognize him. Happy birthday to Justin Scott, who played Joachim in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. It was an uncredited role, but I think that every fan knows him for that role, even though it was relatively small. But he's been in Star Trek more than that. He played in the Star Trek TNG episode Symbiosis as Sobe. He was a drug dealer, actually. A snarky drug dealer, I might add. And he also played in the Voyager episode called Message in a Bottle as Commander Rekar. They tried to steal the USS Prometheus. And that's the episode where we get to see the holographic Doctor number 2, or I don't remember what his actual designation was, but it was a different holographic Doctor than the one we're used to seeing. Great
snarkier. Even if it was possible to be snarkier, he was.
He was. It was a great episode.
And if you don't remember who Joachim was the guy who was next to Khan in Star Trek II, right? The, like, young kid with the blonde hair who also looks very good in that sort of that sort of Star Trek II getup that Khan is wearing.
He's the guy that told Khan, you know, we have Genesis, we have a starship, let's leave.
Get out of here.
Khan was like,
Khan's like,
okay.
No.
No, full speed ahead.
That was him.
We must kill
And the next two I have are biggies. And I don't know who to start with, but I'm going to start with Star Trek, of course. And it was Sir Patrick Stewart's birthday. And so we want to say happy birthday to Sir Patrick Stewart. And he, of course, plays Captain James T. Kirk on Star Trek. So happy birthday to Patrick Stewart.
Jim, the senile old man. He's struck again. Jim, the senile old man. Jim, who does he really play? Come on. The best?
Okay.
Well, at least, I don't know if he's the best, but he's the highest rated captain on our Facebook page of all time.
Admiral Chekhov.
You're killing me.
he, of course, played Captain Jean-Luc Picard. You guys can catch him in season 1 of Picard on Paramount Plus. Season 2 is right around the corner. So happy birthday to Sir Patrick Stewart. But there's another birthday that I wanted to throw out there, and I wasn't going to, but then I realized they share a birthday. They're twins, I guess, in a way. So we also want to say happy birthday to Harrison Ford, of course, Indiana Jones, Han Solo, Blade Runner. It goes on and on and on. And the fact that they shared a birthday, I thought, was a cool little twist. And Harrison Ford, of course, played some iconic heroes that I grew up admiring as a kid. So I wanted to say happy birthday to Harrison Ford as well. So that's our birthdays, guys. And now it's time to go to our Star Trek news.
Priority 1 message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Incoming transmission.
Enter authorization code.
Command codes verified.
Define parameters of program.
Level 9 authorization required.
Specify parameters.
Transfer of data is complete.
All right, guys, we don't spread rumors on the show. We only spread facts. All the stories that we're about to talk about can be found in their entirety on our Facebook page, So please go and check them out if any of these stories interest you. The first story, it just broke. I think it broke a couple of months ago, but more details are coming out about it. And that is WandaVision's Matt Shackman to direct 2023 Star Trek from Captain Marvel screenwriter. The Hollywood Trades are reporting that Paramount has made a deal with director Matt Shackman to helm their next Star Trek feature film. This will be the top secret untitled project produced by J.J. Abrams reported on in April, which Paramount set for a June 9, 2023 release date. According to Deadline, the project is now moving at warp speed, with a script already written and plans to begin production in the spring. Shackman is an award-winning director for his extensive work on theater and television, including filming episodes of 6 Feet Under, House, Game of Thrones, and Succession. His profile has risen over the years for directing all 9 episodes of the Disney Plus series WandaVision, for which he has been nominated for a DGA Award and an Emmy Award. Deadline is also reporting that the film is based on a script written by Geneva Robertson-Dwart and Lindsay Beer. There are no details yet on how this Star Trek movie fits or doesn't fit with the Kelvin Universe or Prime Universe television shows and films. However, after the story came out, Deadline reporter Justin Kroll indicated that the film is written for the Kelvin crew, but no deals are done yet for talent. Now, there's also another Star Trek film that's supposedly in the works that was written by the Star Trek Discovery writer. We talked about this, I think it was last month or the month before. And I wanted to say that I'm getting a feeling, I think, and I want to talk to you guys, my Trek-sperts, about this, but I think that what we might be seeing going on at Paramount Plus is that we might actually see a Star Trek theatrical release movie, which could very well be this one, and then we could see a Star Trek movie on Paramount Plus, kind of like Hulu and Amazon does, like with The War for Tomorrow, which was just on with Chris Pratt, where we might see movies that are produced solely to be shown on Paramount Plus. And that's why we're hearing about 2 different Star Trek movie projects, one which they've specifically said is going to be June 9th, 2023, and this other one, which, you know, we don't really have any information on other than a script had been accepted. What do you guys think about that? Do you think that Paramount might be doing movies just for their streaming service, like they're going to do with Star Trek The Motion Picture? Or you think that they're really actually are working on 2 separate movies? What do you think, Nate?
Well, honestly, there have been so many announcements for new Star Trek movies for the Kelvinverse and whatnot. I am of the mind of we'll wait and see, because there's always announcements, but never any follow through, actually. So I will hold a wait and see attitude towards it.
What do you think? What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, I also am a little bit of the wait and see, but I think it's an interesting model to actually have one that is exclusive to Paramount Plus. I think what we are seeing right now is we are starting to see kind of a shift. Well, not starting. I guess a year ago when COVID hit, a year and a half ago, we kind of started to see even more of a shift in the way that movies and that sort of thing are delivered to us online. The fact that now these days, you know, movie theaters are open again, but new movies are being released simultaneously in the theater and on online services, it makes a lot of sense to produce something that is just a perk for people who subscribe to your service. And, you know, if it's good enough and interesting enough and maybe has enough big names attached to it, maybe it pulls in a few more people, at least for 1 month, until they see the movie.
Yeah. Think, Charles?
Well, if you have had some of their own series, movies, or shows that they've run strictly from their platform, I'm all for at times maybe them doing their own stuff.
I think it's a good idea.
And get some attention, get people on the network.
You know, and it's funny, though. It's a little, like, cyberpunky, too, because it's like the, you know, we already have all these giant corporations, and now we have all these people that are these, like, singular, what is it, like, four or five big services. And, you know, certain ones will only deliver the things that we, that they're going to deliver, and it's, you know, exclusive content to each one. So it kind of keeps you invested in more than one of them, which I think is what they want, which is great.
Yeah. And what do you think, David? You think it's a good idea, David?
Well, one, Paramount isn't nearly progressive enough to release something exclusively on the network. Unless we have another major shutdown, they're going to release all their movies straight to the theater. They don't know how to do anything else but that.
Okay. All right. Well, guys, listen, believe it or not, the show is half over. We're going to take another quick commercial break, but when we come back, we have a lot more Star Trek news to talk about, as well as Star Trek First Contact Dial. We'll be right back.
This podcast is brought to you in part by the Freakopolis Geekery, the premier upstate New York comics and game shop. Centrally located between Saratoga Glens Falls, Ticonderoga, and Rutland, Vermont, the Geekery is a haven for pop culture and science fiction fans. For Star Trek fans, the Geekery features board games like Ascendancy, as well as awesome gaming titles like Star Trek Adventures RPG from Modiphius, Star Trek Away Team's HeroClix, and of course, Star Trek Attack Wing ship-to-ship tactical combat for the tabletop. The Geekery hosts casual play sessions, learn-to-play sessions, and sanctioned organized play tournaments with limited edition prize support. You'll also find comics and trade paperbacks at Freakopolis, including Star Trek titles from IDW. Lots of issues are in stock, and special orders are no problem. Whether you visit in person by shuttlecraft or beam in online to Freakopolis.com, you'll find yourself right at home at the Freakopolis Geekery.
And we're back. We're doing Star Trek news, and for that, we're going to turn to Charles. Charles, what do you got for us?
Oh, this is another one I'm looking forward to, but I think this group knows I'm a big novel fan. Simon & Schuster has announced a new thrilling, untold adventure tied to Star Trek Picard. And unlike the three tie-ins that preceded it, this new novel, titled 12 Seconds, will be set after the events of the first season of the show and presumably before the events of season 2. Penned by our favorite author, Una McCormick, who wrote the well-received first tie-in Last Best Hope, this novel will focus on the character of Raffi. Following the explosive event seen in season 1 of Star Trek Picard, Raffi finds herself torn between returning to her old life as a Starfleet intelligence officer or something a little more tame, teaching at the academy, perhaps. The decision is made for her through, so when a message from an old contact, a Romulan spy, is received, asking for immediate aid, with the help of Rios and Dr. Jurari, assistant from Picard, Raffi decides to take on this crucial mission and quickly learns the passion never stays buried. Finding the truth would be complicated and deadly. There is no cover for the book yet, but it's set to release April 26, 2022, 2 days before my birthday. While not definite, this could be around the time season 2 arrives. You can pre-order Second Self now on Amazon hardcover or Kindle book. And I'm pretty sure with this series, it'll also be available in audio.
Absolutely. And Eric, what do you got for us tonight?
Well, this is great because this is a argument that I've had with people a few times, and this is exactly the side of the argument I fall on. Star Trek, the animated series, is absolutely canon, and here's why. Gene Roddenberry took a casual approach to canon. Jeff Ayers' Voyages of Imagination, the Star Trek fiction companion, quotes Paula Block, who oversaw Star Trek's license publishing operation, as saying that Roddenberry often decanonized certain episodes he decided didn't turn out the way they should have. There's a temptation to let it happen owing to the series' overall low quality and strictly for kids tone. Unfortunately, not only does it not apply regardless of Roddenberry's thoughts, but far too many of the details it establishes have become accepted canon. Attempting to cut it out simply isn't practical. The first and most obvious reason the animated series remains canonical is that most of the original cast returned to voice their characters again. That included series regulars like William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy, and supporting actors like Roger C. Carmel, who returned to voice Harry Mudd, and Mark Leonard, who voiced Spock's father, Sarek, for only the second time. Numerous other details originated in the animated series, such as Kirk's middle name of Tiberius, and Amanda Grayson's love of Alice in Wonderland, which played a vital role in the first season of Star Trek Discovery. Species like the cat-like Cations appeared for the first time, too, only to later reappear as Starfleet officers in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, and with Dr. T'Ana on our new favorite, Star Trek Lower Decks. Perhaps the most irrefutable canon moment in the animated series comes with Season 1, Episode 2, Yesteryear, a sequel to the legendary original series, Season 1, Episode 28, City on the Edge of Forever. Penned by franchise stalwart DC Fontana, she sends the ship back to the Guardian of Forever, where a mishap appears to erase Mr. Spock from existence. Spock has to return to his childhood to prevent his premature death. The animated series rarely tops anyone's favorite list, but there's nothing else in the franchise like it, and the details provided are essential to Star Trek as any other series. And I tend to agree with this. I think, you know, even for whatever you think about the quality of the animation or that sort of thing, you got to watch the animated series. There's so much great information in there, including one of my favorites, The Infinite Vulcan, Whatever Happened to 50-Foot Spock, sources say we don't know, and I want to know.
And don't forget, they did reference the Thylogians on Lower Decks.
They absolutely did, and it's been great, like, with Lower Decks and even, like they were saying, Discovery, kind of touching back to that is just like, lending, validity to it. Anybody who kind of scoffed at it before now has to kind of say, well, actually, you know, that does actually fit in with what we're seeing now, so I love it.
Can I
poke some holes in your reference there? I'm not sure where your reference is coming from. But I personally think it's the fifth. I treat it as the fifth year of, or fourth and fifth years of the mission. But Memory Alpha says questionable the canon. Here's the reason why they say it's questionable the canon. Roddenberry first officially removed it in 1988. According to Voyages of Imagination, with the exception of the parts involving Spock's youth from Fontana's episode Yesteryear that you referred to, about Yesteryear had been confirmed in a reference book by Michael Okuda, in his work Star Trek Chronology, Star Trek Encyclopedia, and then Paramount Pictures, according to Memory Alpha now, has followed suit by elevating Roddenberry's request to policy, having officially declared the series non-canon according to the Star Trek Encyclopedia first edition. However, apparently it was formally re-added to official canon in 2006 by the franchise in order to commercially promote the occasion of the series' release to DVD that year. So I just wanted to throw that out at you, Eric.
Cool. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, so, that definitely, I mean, that actually fits right in with what the article was saying here, was that Roddenberry was not a big fan of much of the animated series being considered canon, and that he actually was a little embarrassed about it, and I think it's because he didn't have as much influence on it as he wanted to. And so the fact that it was kind of later added back into canon, yes, maybe as a promotional stunt, I guess, the way that Memory Alpha sort of, you know, presents that information. But the point is that it's not just the fact that it is officially canon. The point is that now other Star Trek is starting to reference it. And so it's kind of, you know, I guess, what is that term when you sort of retroactively canonize something? There's a term for that that I can't think of. Anyway, there's a bit of that going on.
You retcon stuff.
Retcon, yeah, that's the word. Yep, yeah.
Well, I can't, I personally, you can't turn around and say, oh, well, episode 7 is canon, but the rest of it's not.
I mean, and that's what Roddenberry was trying to do. He basically, and it makes sense. I mean, the man was in charge of it, so he was trying to cherry pick the ones that he liked and ignore the ones that he didn't like. And the fact is that, you know, when he put a season worth of television together, it's all out there. And there are good episodes and there are bad episodes. It doesn't mean the bad ones didn't happen. And he was involved in the show. Everybody who was involved in, well, not everybody, a few different groups, but, you know, characters, voices, his input, you know, there was crossover. There was enough crossover to, I think, tie the two together for sure.
Yeah,
and
I agree. As a matter of fact, the article continues on. I'm not going to read anything, but it points out where in other Star Trek franchise stuff the TAS was referred to.
Yeah,
so
like
I'll link it to you guys so you can read it at your leisure.
Well, moving on here, guys, I just want to say that Miko is going to be introducing 14-inch Star Trek action figures, which is pretty cool. The revived Miko Star Trek action figure line has been running strongly for a few years now, and after moving into the Next Generation and even into Star Trek Discovery in recent outings, the company is now expanding quite literally into their next venture, 14-inch high versions of their retro original series lineup, revealed through the company's social media feeds on MikoMuseum.com. Here are the first three 14-inch figures coming to stores this summer. Captain Kirk, Mr. Spock, and the Gorn.
Yeah,
not a very good Gorn. with each interchangeable hands and axe and accessories. The Spock figure will first be on hit store shelves later this summer. In the meantime, if you'd like to add these 14-inch figures to your collection, they're up for pre-order at Entertainment Earth now for $39.99 each. I got to get me a Gorn. And, Charles, you got another interesting story here.
All right. First set. Why Discovery's grudge the cat is so big. While the introduction of a new character like Book is exciting in and of itself, it's his cat grudge. And that's really got what fans said. Cats are common enough occurrence in Star Trek. The last time the cat was featured the main character was Data's cat Spot in Star Trek The Next Generation. So it's certainly exciting to see another fellow feline companion set up to become a recurring character in Star Trek. New York Times bestselling author Rob Perlman focuses on Discovery's breakout star, Grudge the Cat. Full of cat photos and whimsical illustrations, sharper than a claw and more stunning than a phaser blast, the book of Grudge, the prime director, features first take on everything from space travel to proper care and training of an array of alien species. Star Trek inspired quotes, haiku, meditations on Grudge's most favorite hitting, napping, and people. Get ready to live long and prosper as Book of Grudge delivers Grudge's snarking thoughts to space travel, replicators, the Federation, and the humanoids he has encountered on Discovery. Offers expert advice regarding the proper care and training of the humanoid. There's even more catnip for fans as the Book of Grudge features photos taken on set for Star Trek Discovery as well as exclusive illustrations created especially for this book. Pre-order now. This book is available November 9th, 2021.
awesome.
Yeah.
I'm 100% buying one of those for my mom.
I think I'm going to buy the physical book rather than the Kindle book because I want to have the book. I'm
yeah,
a
you
cat
want that,
person. Actually,
you want that on your
AJ?
Coffee table. No, AJ, don't invite AJ. Him in, Jim. Don't invite
no,
him in.
AJ is not here right now.
You cannot
right.
invite the cat in.
Oh, no. He's not here. So I'm looking forward to getting my paws on that book. And so, Eric, you got the last story. And this when I saw this one, it had your name all over it because we've talked about this many times in the past. I saw this article, and I said, Eric. So what do you got? What's our final story on Star Trek News about?
This is one of my favorite little bits of trivia about Star Trek that I pull out when I'm amongst people who will appreciate it. All the actors that have played Spock. That's right. Mr. Spock is still the universe's most famous Vulcan. The character was introduced to fans in the very first episode of Star Trek, the original series, entitled The Man Trap. Spock was the only alien aboard the original Enterprise. His Vulcan logic served as a balance to Captain Kirk's emotional and sometimes impulsive nature. The character also served as the device to explore what it means to be human. The enduring interest in Spock and his story is evidenced by the fact that the character has been featured in multiple reimaginings of the Star Trek franchise. The character was revived for both J.J. Abrams' Star Trek movies and Alex Kurtzman's Star Trek television franchise. Since both of these reboots focused on younger versions of Spock, new actors took on the monumental task of becoming Spock. Here are all the actors that have played Spock in the Star Trek universe, and you're going to want to keep count because there'll be a quiz at the end. Leonard Nimoy, the original Spock. For many Star Trek fans, Leonard Nimoy is the only Spock. Nimoy was the first actor to bring the character to life. He portrayed Spock in 80 episodes of TOS, 22 episodes of Star Trek The Animated Series, and 2 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation. Also, 8 Star Trek movies. Nimoy had a complicated relationship with Spock, though. He wrote 2 books about portraying the character and his time in the Trekverse. The first was called I Am Not Spock, and the second was called I Am Spock, which is very interesting. So he is, of course, our number one. Our number two is Zachary Quinto, the Kelvin timeline Spock. When Abrams rebooted the Star Trek franchise in 2009, he needed to find a new actor to play Spock. Of course, finding the right actor to play such an iconic character was difficult, but Abrams was convinced that Quinto was the perfect choice. Quinto also revealed that when he was overwhelmed by the pressures of reimagining one of Trek's most famous characters, Nimoy was always there to support him and let him know that he was doing a great job. Ultimately, Nimoy was very pleased with Quinto's interpretation of Spock. That's number two. Number three, Ethan Peck, the modern Spock. Like the Kelvin timeline movies, Star Trek Discovery gave fans a different version of the Spock they once knew. Discovery's Spock was much more emotional. He had an even more complicated relationship with his family, and he had a human foster sister. Unlike Quinto, Peck didn't have the privilege of working directly with Nimoy to create his version of Spock, unfortunately. Nimoy passed away in 2015, long before Discovery aired. However, Peck did make sure to draw his inspiration from Nimoy's performances. That's three. Now we've got the young Spock. Billy Simpson played young Spock in the animated series episode Yesteryear. Carl Stevens, Vadia Potenza, Stephen Manley, and Joe W. Davis also portrayed Spock in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. Jacob Kogan played a younger version of Spock in Abrams' first Star Trek movie. And Liam Hughes played Spock as a child in 3 episodes of Star Trek Discovery's second season. So if you add that all up, folks, how many people have played Spock? Were you paying attention?
I think it was 9.
And
so close. It is 10. It is 10.
Oh, I was one off.
So there you go. 10 people have played Spock.
10. That's a lot of Spock. A lot of Spock. All right, guys.
A lot of Spock.
We're going to talk about Star Trek First Contact. So start dialing 646-668-2433. We'd love to hear what you think about Star Trek First Contact. And to get us in the mood, here is the trailer. If I can get it, where did it go? There it is.
In his nightmares, he can see them. In his mind, he can hear them.
Locutus.
In his soul, he can feel them.
I've just received report from Deep Space 5. Long-range sensors have picked
up. Yes, I know. The Borg set a course for Earth. Maximum warp.
Now, in Earth's darkest hour, he must fight them again.
Captain, Earth. Life science?
Population approximately 9 billion. All Borg.
How?
Time travel.
They went back and assimilated Earth. Changed history. I must follow them back. Repair whatever damage they've done.
But this time, they must travel to the past.
April 4th, 2063.
To save our future.
You're all astronauts on some kind of Star Trek. They invade our space, and we fall back. They assimilate entire worlds, and we fall back. Not again. The line must be drawn here. It
looks like the control deck 26 up to 11.
Mr. Data and I are returning to the ship.
Captain! Data!
We must activate the auto-destruct sequence. You want to destroy the ship, by the way. You coward.
If you were any other man, I would kill you where you stand.
Let's rock and roll!
Destroy them. Just watch. Your future's end.
We've lost shields and our weapons are gone.
Resistance. Is futile.
Perhaps today is a good day to die.
Don't look slow on the damn ship!
No!
We are not going to lose the Enterprise. Not to the Borg, not while I'm in command.
Star Trek. First Contact.
All right, Star Trek First Contact is a 1996 film directed by Jonathan Frakes in his motion picture directorial debut. It is the eighth film in the Star Trek film series, as well as the second to star the cast of TNG. First Contact was released on November 22, 1996, and was the highest-grossing film on its opening weekend. It eventually made $92 million in the United States and Canada, with an additional $54 million in other territories, combining for a worldwide total of $146 million. Critical reception was mostly positive. Critics, including Robert Ebert, considered it to be one of the Star Trek films, and it was the most positively reviewed film in the franchise. 93% of the reviews were positive, until being marginally surpassed with 94% by the 2009 reboot film. First Contact was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Makeup and won three Saturn Awards. Jerry Goldsmith scored First Contact, his third Star Trek feature. Goldsmith wrote a sweeping main title, which begins with Alexander Courage's Star Trek fanfare. Instead of composing a menacing theme to underscore the Borg, Goldsmith wrote a pastoral theme linked to humanity's hope. The themes used a four-note motif used in Goldsmith's Star Trek V, the Final Frontier score, which is used in First Contact as a friendship theme and general thematic link. 1996 marked the 30th anniversary of the Star Trek franchise. The franchise was on rocky ground. Ratings due to Deep Space Nine and Voyager has shed millions of viewers, being bested by Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, as the highest-rated syndicated TV series. First Contact was heavily marketed to an extent not seen since the release of Star Trek The Motion Picture in 1979. Several novelizations of the film were written for different age groups. Playmates Toys produced 6- and 9-inch action figures, in addition to ship models and a phaser. Two making of television specials premiered on HBO and the Sci-Fi Channel, as well as being promoted during the 30th anniversary television special on UCN. Simon & Schuster Interactive developed a Borg-themed video game, and Macintosh and Windows Personal Computers released Star Trek Borg. So that's a brief history of Star Trek First Contact. And, yeah, we have to cut for our final commercial break, guys, believe it or not. And when we come back, we had on our Facebook page, I always ask you guys as fans to rate the movie. So when we give our fan ratings, the fan ratings that we use on this show are directly straight from you guys. But now the names that we list on the show, all the countries, all the cities that we tell you about, you are the guys that vote in our poll. And the numbers that we give you come right from you guys. So when we come back, we're going to hear from Eric, and he's going to tell us what you guys thought about Star Trek First Contact. So don't touch your dial. Don't run away. We're going to be right back after this very quick message. And there it is. We'll be right back. Don't touch that dial.
Trek Talking, all things Star Trek and beyond. Thursday night, 7:30 to 9:30, all hailing frequencies are open. iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon, and wherever fine podcasts are found. Trek Talking, boldly going wherever your mind is willing to go.
And Eric, what do our fans on our Facebook page have to say about Star Trek First Contact?
Well, fan Steve Albert says, I give it a 10, one of the best. The opening battle scenes with the Defiant is outstanding, but too short. I totally agree with you, Steve. It could have been so much cooler, but it was also really cool the way they did it. Top fan Jesse Crawford says, 9.5. It's my third favorite Star Trek film, right behind Wrath of Khan. An Undiscovered Country. Andreas Casares says 10, best TNG movie, second only to Walk, Wrath of Khan, of course. Top fan Bobby A. Bizet Jr. says a 10. It's my favorite Trek movie. Greg Scott, 9.5 for me. It's near perfect. Griff Morgan, a good 8. The timelines of Worf and Defiant / DS9 and Enterprise don't quite fit, in my humble opinion. Ryan Joseph gave it a 10 with 3 exclamation points. Sean Smith, 10, favorite of the next-gen movies. Top fan Carl Humphrey, 10. James Robertson, 10. And so it does not take a genius to figure out that our fan score, when you sort of average all of those 10s out with a couple of things that aren't 10s, brings this movie in, I believe, at the highest that we've ever seen. This movie has a fan score of 9.7 on our Trek Talking page.
Yeah, 9.7. Pretty good, pretty good. So, David, since you're our guest today, why don't you start off and tell us what you thought about Star Trek First Contact, and do you agree with our fan rating of 9.7, and where would you put it?
Actually, First Contact is literally one of my favorite Star Trek movies. A famous saying, I don't like nerds discriminate, but First Contact literally ranks up there one of the best movies in the Star Trek franchise. There was a portion in the movie where Alfre Woodard was talking to Sir Patrick Stewart, and they were quoting Moby Dick. And from the audience point of view, Alfre Woodard was saying that Captain Picard was like Captain Ahab and that he would do anything to capture this white whale, and including destroy his ship and himself. And that was very poignant, but then I thought about it, and I was like, wait a minute, that's literally describing the Borg Queen. She was Captain Ahab, who risk it all to capture humanity, but end up losing it in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good point. And I actually, upon reviewing this movie too, I was thinking a little bit about that. And, you know, there's that scene that you're talking about where she's talking to Picard, the Ahab scene, we'll call it. And, you know, I put it in the context of Star Trek Picard, where he has been accused of extreme hubris by many people, and we see him kind of lamenting some of the decisions that he's made throughout his life. And I love Star Trek First Contact. It's one of my favorite movies as well. And yet, is this not like the very definition of Picard just kind of saying, no, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm not going to listen to you. I'm not going to listen to you. I'm going to do it the way that I think it should be done. And the only reason he gets away with it, the only reason he gets away with it is Data deactivates the self-destruct program on the Enterprise E. Otherwise, he would have blown up another ship. And I'm not sure that would have been the right decision, despite the fact that...
That wasn't the right decision.
yeah, exactly. So, yeah, very interesting. I wonder how much he regrets this. It would be cool if Picard could come back and touch back to, you know, the decisions that he made in First Contact. That's a great comment there, David.
Yeah.
Well, David, do you agree with the fans? Would you give it a 9.7? Would you give it higher? Would you give it lower? Where would you put it?
No, I think 9.7 is a really great spot to be at. I mean, out of how many movies? 12? To be ranked up there above 9, under 10, 13 movies? Yeah, I mean, that's pretty good to have that kind of scoring.
And Eric, we've heard from you, Eric, but why don't you tell us where you would put Star Trek First Contact?
Yeah, I've always put First Contact right up in my top two as well. I will tell you that I think the more times, I mean, I've seen this more than any of the other Star Trek movies for sure, and every time I watch it, it becomes a little bit more like a TNG episode to me, kind of the same way that, and I'm not blaspheming here, but in the same way that like Insurrection is. I think that First Contact could have been a like two-part episode, one of those season enders, like Best of Both Worlds. So I don't know if it has the epicness to me of like the motion picture, which I have just re-fallen in love with over the last couple of years, but it is still right up there. One of my favorites, amazing soundtrack, right? One of the best soundtracks. Love this movie. I will go with a 9.3.
Excellent. How about you, Charles?
I haven't decided which is my favorite of the two movies. I think it is probably one of the top ones in the series. I'll probably go with about a 9.5 in it.
9.5? That's still pretty good. That's nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about this recently. I feel like the motion picture gets a bum rap, so it, you know, on our all-time list, it's kind of down there a little bit. I think it deserves to be a little higher. But First Contact has so many good things going for it. I wonder if it has aged well. One of the things that I was kind of thinking about was just, like, all the scenes with the Borg Queen and Data. And, you know, she is trying to kind of stimulate his humanity, I guess, with his emotion chip and kind of, you know, expose him to things that he's never been exposed to. I felt like that kind of storyline for Data fit better back in the day when the movie came out. And I don't know as a one-off if it's like a really compelling story point, you know. This movie has the A and the B story. It's got what's going on in the Enterprise, and it's got what's going on with everybody else. And the stuff that is on the Enterprise inevitably leads to kind of the Borg Queen interaction, which, by the way, nice to see her return. I just like the Picard Borg Queen story a little bit better than the Data Borg Queen story myself.
And what about you, Nate?
Well, I just want to say we've discussed these top movies before. As far as the classics go, 2 and 6 are my top two movies. I would say that this, I like Generations also, so I don't know if this or Generations is higher for me or the Next Generation ones, but both the Next Generation ones would still, in my opinion, be lower than my top two, again, 2 and 6 being my top ones. Another thing I want to say is that my favorite scene in this movie is when the Vulcans land and Zefram Cochrane sees them and pulls out a pistol and shoots the Vulcan. That's my favorite in this movie.
Oh, my friend. Oh, my friend. Yes.
I thought that was Chekhov.
And also to fall back on the discussion of Captain Ahab, I'm on Memory Alpha in the trivia section of this, and it says here that, of course, he makes the Moby Dick quote, but apparently he also played, Patrick Stewart also played Captain Ahab in the 1998 TV miniseries of Moby Dick. So he ends up playing Captain Ahab as well. So I just wanted to also point that out. But yes, favorite scene was Zefram Cochrane taking out the Vulcan.
Well, I got to say that First Contact is one of my top Star Trek movies. When we finish with all the movies, you guys may have noticed we've been taking them out of order. But when we get all the movies done, we will give you guys a complete list of where you guys, as our fans, have stacked these movies, and we'll discuss it, and we'll see if we agree with what you guys came up with, if we would shift them around a little bit, and how we would shift them. But because there's so many movies, and because it depends on the mood that I'm in at any given time, I tend to say, my top three favorite movies, my least three favorite movies, and then everything in between. That's just the way I do it, because sometimes, what's the difference between your seventh favorite movie and your eighth favorite movie, really? So I just kind of, my top three, my worst three, and everything else. And we'll get around to that soon as we get done with all the movies. But for me, First Contact is in my top three, for sure. And why? Well, because first of all, I think the soundtrack was phenomenal. It's a great soundtrack. Jerry Goldsmith does it again. He did it with the motion picture. He did it in Star Trek V, and he did it in this movie. Music is so important. Also, Worf. One of the fans was talking about Worf getting there, and it didn't quite line up. I haven't looked at star dates or anything like that, but the fact that Worf was there with the Defiant battling the Borg, I could see Worf doing that. I could see Worf saying to Sisko, hey, Ben, I'm taking off. I'm going to go battle the Borg, and just taking the Defiant and going. I completely buy Worf doing that. Now, why the crew on the Defiant was nameless, unknown people? Well, it's a movie, and they're not going to pay the main actors to show up for a little, brief cameo in a movie. So I can buy the fact that we didn't know any of the bridge crew. That's cool. But the fact that the Defiant was there was awesome. And Worf, one of the greatest lines from Worf is, perhaps today is a good day to die. Prepare for revving speed. I love it. It's so Worf-like. For me,
good. I was just going to say, and then don't forget, Jim, my other favorite line, which trumps that one just a little tiny bit, was when, Riker says something about tough little ship. And Worf's like, little.
Nope.
Just goes to,
little.
It just goes to show what kind of pride he has for that Defiant.
he goes, you do remember how to fire phasers, don't you?
He's like, argh.
I like the, for me, I find the interaction between Worf and Picard to be really well written and well done, because that relationship that they have, Card was his Chadich in Redemption. And when Picard tells him that he doesn't have honor and he wants to run away with like a coward, and you can see if this was any other man, Worf would have killed him where he stood, and that's true. He would have.
But the apology is where you really see Worf stands up.
Yeah.
And he's like, listen, you're not my commanding officer.
Well,
right.
the best thing about that apology that Picard makes is, and this is kind of one thing that I think everybody can learn a little bit from when they watch this movie, is just like, eventually Picard is like, listen, Worf, I totally regret what I said to you, right? He admits that he was wrong. He's like, I regret what I said. You are one of the most honorable, one of the bravest men I actually know. And it just is Picard acknowledging that everybody says stupid stuff in the heat of the moment every once in a while. And as long as you are like self-reflective enough to kind of go back and say, hey, actually, you know, I didn't do that the way that maybe I should have. I'm going to go back and mention it to the person again and repair that relationship. Don't leave it silent. Bring it up again. Learn from Picard.
Well, like when he says, actually, Mr. Worf, I regret some of the things I said earlier. And Worf says, some?
Some. I mean, they had to throw a little humor in there, too. But
yeah, I'm a huge Worf fan, and I really like the way they got Worf on the ship and the way he interacted with everybody. I really liked that. I thought that the whole thing with the Borg Queen, remember, we didn't know there was a Borg Queen. The Borg Queen was introduced in this movie, and she was introduced with that awesome scene where she dangles from the ceiling on those Borg tentacles or whatever they were, and she's only half a body with a spine dangling, and she lowers down into the Borg Queen body. That was phenomenal at the time. That was mind-blowing. And to find out that, you know, Picard says when he was Locutus, he goes, oh, you were always there in the background. We never saw her. And so Picard says, well, you know, you were always there in the background. I always knew you were there. And now we get to see her. And as Eric said, she comes back again and again and again on Voyager. But this was the first time we saw her. And I thought that was a great introduction, you know, to the Borg. You know, now they have a queen, like a beehive. And I thought that was awesome.
Right.
The space battle at the beginning was short, but look at all the ships that we saw in that. We saw the Seamrunner, the Thunderchild, the Defiant was there. It was short, but it got the point across. You know, I thought that was really awesome. And one of the best things I think about First Contact is it sets up one of the best episodes of Star Trek Enterprise in Regeneration. And when Picard shoots down the Borg sphere, it crashes on Earth, and it's never heard from again. Or was it? Because on Star Trek Enterprise, they find the Borg sphere crashed, and then hence we have that whole thing, which I thought was really good.
I thought that was a beautiful time with Enterprise, because a lot of people kind of separated Enterprise from Trek lore because it happened so early on. But that tie-in to the Borg and to the movie was very skillfully done.
Yeah, I people that don't watch Enterprise, didn't watch it, won't give it a chance because they didn't like the theme song or for whatever reason. You've heard me say it before, and I'm going to say it again right now. If you've never watched it and you're going to watch one episode, watch Regeneration. It's a really well-done episode. And what makes it unique is that the Enterprise crew doesn't show up until 19 minutes into a 43-minute episode. So let that sink in, okay? It's that well done. It's just an excellent episode. I highly recommend it. So, you know, there's that as well. And Picard dealing with what the Borg did to him, you guys were talking about the Ahab and Lily and why he was acting the way he was. And there's a line he says, Seven of Nine, later on Picard, where Seven says to him, you know, did you ever get your humanity back? And he says something like, you know, almost or not quite. I'd have to go back and rewatch it again. But he makes some type of comment where he's still trying to regain his humanity.
Right.
Just like
he makes a mention that he's still fighting against the Borg influence in some way.
Right.
And he's trying to be human.
And I think that him wanting to blow up the ship, I think he's so hate-filled and he wants revenge so bad against the Borg for what they did to him, what they made him do to all those Starfleet officers, that he can't see the forest for the trees. And I think that plays in really good to the problems, how we see him dealing with it when he goes on the Borg cube later on and starts. I should have said spoiler alert. I'm sorry. Spoiler alert. Yeah. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it. So overall, I'm with the fans. I would give Star Trek First Contact a 9.7. There's just so much good stuff going on in that movie. Yeah, like Nate said, when Zephyr Cochran blows away the Vulcans, that was awesome.
What?
You know.
You guys. We're
dang
gonna get,
right.
We're going to get mail if we don't correct this on the air.
But, yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was just, and, you know, everybody, the part where Barkley runs up to Zephyr Cochran and, you know, he's just talking to him, and everybody wants to meet the great Zephyr Cochran, and he's this hero, but we're meeting the hero before he actually becomes a hero. And he's not quite the man that history remembers him as, because he actually hasn't done the things that make him the man that he will become later. Even Geordi gets sucked into it when he mentions his statue, which was great. And one of my favorite scenes in the movie, I think Jonathan Frakes just did a phenomenal job directing this movie all the way around. One of my favorite scenes is when they're in the bar and Deanna Troi is in there drinking. She says, I had to take 10 shots of something called tequila just to find out he was the man we're looking for. And he says, I think you're totally blended. And she says, don't tell me how to do my job. And she passes out. Mm-hmm. And then Zephyr Cochran walks over and cranks up the jukebox, and Riker just kind of puts his hand on his head like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? That whole scene, I thought, was just wonderfully written, wonderfully acted.
Well,
overall,
from Twister, we have no time to talk about time.
Yes.
Something like that.
We don't have the time to talk about time. It was a great scene. And overall, I love this movie. And as a little sidebar, when this movie came out in 1996, me as a Klingon, of course, my wife was just a Starfleet officer, and a friend of ours was, what did he dress up as? I don't remember. There were three of us, and we went to the movie theater, and like I said, it was right around, it was November, so we went and we rang the bell for the Salvation Army in front of the movie theater. And our bucket in front of the movie theater with us as Klingons and Federation officers raised more money on the opening night of Star Trek than they did in any of the other buckets they had out that night, which was really cool. And it was a lot of fun.
Oh, congrats.
We ended up on the front page of the paper, and it was a blast. So I have a lot of good memories surrounding this movie, and I agree. 9.7, it's a really good movie. A lot of fun.
And you know, Jim, go ahead, David.
Speaking of Klingons and wives, I'm going to have to depart. Thank you for inviting me onto your show. I had a really great time. I would love to do this again. I wish you guys a great evening, and thank you so much.
Well, thank you for calling, David. Thank you for giving away those tickets to Nate, and now I get a chance to meet Nate at Star Trek Las Vegas, or I'm sorry, the 55-year mission in Las Vegas. So thank you very much, David, for coming on. You're always welcome, and have a great night. Kapla.
Kapla.
Thank you, David. See you soon.
So I just want to let you guys know we're just about running out of time. Just a reminder, next week we're going to have Jeremy Roberts, Mr. Dimitri Valtaine from Star Trek VI, and a Voyager flashback, which was the 25th anniversary, one of the 25th anniversary episodes. The other one was Trials and Tribulations on Deep Space Nine. He's going to be with us live, so you guys can call. You can ask him questions. You can talk to him. Our phone number is 646-668-2433. And we're also going to be giving away copies of Star Trek Discovery Season 3. Now, I'm not sure. The email they sent me mentions the Steelbox editions of the Blu-ray. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to be sending me, but we are going to have 5 copies, and you can win them for free. And I have to read this for you guys on the air live one more time. Star Trek Discovery Season 3 is coming to Blu-ray, DVD, and limited edition steel book. The must-have collection features all 13 episodes and also includes over 2 hours of special features, including deleted scenes, behind-the-scenes featurettes, cast interviews, and a gag reel. Own Star Trek Discovery Season 3 on Blu-ray and DVD now. From CBS and Paramount Home Entertainment. Actually, you can't own it until next week, but you can call here and you can pick up a copy. So please do that. Put us on your speed dial. Give us a call. Talk to Jeremy and win a copy of Star Trek Discovery Season 3. And hopefully we can make this work and we can have more stuff to give away to you guys in the future. So I'm counting on you guys to call next week and make this one of our best shows ever. And yes, Nate, you can call and win. So isn't that cool?
Yeah, it is cool.
So anyways, I just want to say thank you to David for calling in and hanging out with us and for giving us a pair of tickets to give away to the Star Trek Las Vegas 55-year mission. Thank you so much, David. And I also want to say thank you to Nate for calling tonight, winning some tickets to Star Trek 55-year mission in Las Vegas and hanging out with us and talking about Star Trek First Contact. Thank you, Nate.
That was a good time. Thanks.
I also want to say thank you to the one and only birthday boy himself, Eric, for hanging out tonight and Trek talking with us. Thank you and happy birthday, Eric.
Thank you guys so much. I had a blast as always.
And I also want to say thank you last but definitely not least to my right-hand man who's manning out there in Las Vegas, and I'm going to be getting an opportunity to meet him at the 55-year mission. And, of course, I'm talking about Sub-Commander Charles. So thank you so much for hanging out and Trek talking with us tonight, Charles.
Oh, thank you. It's always fun.
It is a lot of fun. It is indeed. I want to let you guys know that in addition to Jeremy Roberts being with us next week and your opportunity to win Star Trek Discovery Season 3, our next show after that on the 29th, we're going to be doing a book nook, and we're going to be talking about Una McCormick's book, Wonderlands. So you definitely don't want to miss that. Please visit us on our Facebook page at Trek Talking and Beyond. Give us a like. Give us a follow. Tell us where you're listening from, so I can get you on a future fan shout-out. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim. Thank you for joining us. Hailing Frequency, our close. Good night, everybody.
Good morning, Prosper.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.